Baby, stop poking me. No, 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 don't poke my tummy. Can't you see that I'm in the middle of a food coma? I am food coma-ing right now. That means leave me be and let me lay here to die. Oh, what do you mean you can't sleep? You should also be food coma-ing. I just fed you so much food. I just fed myself so much food. I should have rendered you incapable of function, let alone movement. Annoying, poking, movement. Fine, fine. What do you need, baby doll? You want me to read to you again? I mean, sure. The book is still in my nightstand from yesterday. I just didn't know you enjoyed it so much. Sure, sure. Totally. You're not tired of my voice yet? What do you mean you can never get... I'm so done with you. I'm incapacitated at the moment. You can't be cute like Pat, but fine, fine. Let me set up. Okay. No falling asleep in the middle, okay? Where was I? Yes, yes, I know that you don't like it when I dog-ear my books, but that is my prerogative. Do not judge me. Hey, hey, who's holding the book here? So who gets a say in how to do things? I do. So shut your yap, lay down, and let me read to you. Chapter 3. Not all that Mrs. Bennet, however, with the assistance of her 5 daughters, could ask on the subject was sufficient to draw from her husband any satisfactory description of Mr. Bingley. They attacked him in various ways, with barefaced questions, ingenious oppositions, and distant surmises, but he eluded the skill of them all, and they were at last obliged to accept the second-hand intelligence of their neighbor Lady Lucas. Her report was highly favorable. Sir William had been delighted with him. He was quite young, wonderfully handsome, extremely agreeable, and to crown the whole, he was meant to be at the next assembly with a large party. Nothing could be more delightful. To be fond of dancing was a certain step towards falling in love. Very lively hopes of Mr. Bingley's heart were entertained. "If I can see but one of my daughters happily settled at Netherfield," says Mrs. Bennet to her husband, "and all the others equally well married, I shall have nothing to wish for." In a few days, Mr. Bingley returned Mr. Bennet's visit, and sat about 10 minutes with him in his library. He had entertained hopes of being admitted to a sight of the young ladies, of whose beauty he had heard much, but he saw only the father. The ladies were somewhat more fortunate, for they had the advantage of ascertaining from an upper window that he wore a blue coat and rode a black horse. An invitation to dinner was soon afterwards dispatched, and already had Mrs. Bennet planned the courses that were to credit to her housekeeping when an answer arrived which deferred it all. Excuse me. Mr. Bingley was obliged to be in town the following day, and consequently unable to accept the honor of their invitation. Mrs. Bennet was quite disconcerted. She could not imagine what business he could have in town so soon after his arrival in Hertfordshire? And she began to fear that he might always be flying about from one place to another, and never settled at Netherfield as he ought to be. Lady Lucas quieted her fears a little by starting the idea of his being gone to London only to get a large party for the ball, and a report soon followed that Mr. Bingley was to bring 12 ladies and 7 gentlemen with him to the assembly. The girls grieved over a large number of ladies, were comforted that they, the blah 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 blah. but were comforted the day before the ball by hearing that instead of 12, he had brought only 6 with him from London, his 5 sisters and a cousin. And when the party entered the assembly room, it consisted of only 5 altogether: Mr. Bingley, his 2 sisters, the husband of the oldest, and another young man. Mr. Bingley was good-looking and gentlemanlike. He had a pleasant countenance and easy, unaffected manners. His sisters were fine women, with an air of decided fashion. His brother-in-law, Mr. Hurst, merely looked the gentleman, but his friend, Mr. Darcy, soon drew the attention of the room by his fine, tall person, handsome features, noble mien, and the report, which was in general circulation within 5 minutes of his entrance, of his having 10,000 a year. The gentlemen pronounced him to be a fine figure of a man, the ladies declared he was much handsomer than Mr. Bingley, and he was looked at with great admiration for about half the evening, till his manners gave a disgust which turned the tide of his popularity, for he was discovered to be proud, to be above his company, and above being pleased. And not all his large state in Derbyshire could then save him from having a most forbidding, disagreeable countenance, and being unworthy to be compared with his friend. Mr. Bingley had soon found himself acquainted with all the principal people in the room. He was lively and unreserved, danced every dance, was angry that the ball closed so early, and talked of giving one himself at Netherfield. Such amiable qualities must speak for themselves. What a contrast between him and his friend! Mr. Darcy danced only once with Mrs. Hurst and once with Miss Bingley, declined being introduced to any other lady, and spent the rest of the evening in walking about the room, speaking occasionally to one of his own party. His character was decided. He was the proudest, most disagreeable man in the world, and everybody hoped that he would never come again. Against the most violent against him was Mrs. Bennet, whose dislike of his general behavior was sharpened into particular resentment by his having slighted one of her daughters. Elizabeth Bennet had been obliged, by the scarcity of gentlemen, to sit down for 2 dances. And during part of that time, Mr. Darcy had been standing near enough for her to overhear a conversation between him and Mr. Bingley, who came from the dance for a few minutes to press his friend to join it. "Come, Darcy," said he, "I must have you dance. I hate to see you standing about by yourself in this stupid manner. You had much better dance." "I certainly shall not. You know how I detest it, unless I am particularly acquainted with my partner. At such an assembly as this, it would be insupportable. Your sisters are engaged, and there is not another woman in the room who would not be a punishment to me to stand up with." "I would not be so fastidious as you are," cried Bingley, "for a kingdom. Upon my honour, I have never met so many pleasant girls in all my life as I have this evening, and there are several of them, you see, uncommonly pretty." "Yeah, Mr. Bingley is pretty nice, isn't he? Such a sweetheart. I like him." "You are dancing with the only handsome girl in the room," said Mr. Darcy, looking at the eldest Miss Bennet. "Oh, she is the most beautiful creature I have ever beheld. But there is one of her sisters sitting down just behind you, who is very pretty, and I dare say very agreeable. Do let me ask my partner to introduce you." "Oh, isn't he so cute? God, I love Bingley." "Which do you mean?" And turning round, he looked for a moment at Elizabeth, till catching her eye, he withdrew his own and coldly said, "She is tolerable, but not handsome enough to tempt me. And I am in no humour at present to give consequence to young ladies who are slighted by other men. You had better return to your partner and enjoy her smiles, for you are wasting your time with me." Mr. Bingley followed his advice. Mr. Darcy walked off, and Elizabeth remained with no very cordial feelings toward him. She told the story, however, with great spirit among her friends, for she had a lively, playful disposition which delighted in anything ridiculous. The evening altogether passed off pleasantly to the whole family. Mrs. Bennet had seen her eldest daughter, much admired by the Netherfield party. Mr. Bingley had danced with her 2. She had been most distinguished by his sisters. Excuse me. Jane was as much gratified by this as her mother could be, though in a quieter way. Elizabeth felt Jane's pleasure. Mary had herself mentioned to Miss Bingley as the most accomplished girl in the neighbourhood, and Catherine and Lydia had been fortunate enough to be never without partners, which is all that they had yet learnt to care for at a ball. They returned, therefore, in good spirits to Longbourn, the village where they lived, and of which they were the principal inhabitants. They found Mr. Bennet still up. With the book, he was regardless of time, and of the and on the present occasion, he had a good deal of curiosity as to the event of an evening which had raised such splendid expectations. He had rather hoped that all of his wife's views on the stranger would be disappointed, but he soon found he had a very different story to hear. "Oh, my dear Mr. Bennet," as she entered the room, "we had a most delightful evening, a most excellent ball. I wish you had been there. Jane was so admired, nothing could be like it. Everybody said how well she looked. Mr. Bingley thought her quite beautiful, and danced with her twice. Only think of that, my dear. He actually danced with her twice, and she was the only creature in the room that he asked a second time. First of all, he asked Miss Lucas, and I was so vexed to see him stand up with her, but however, he did not admire her at all. Indeed, nobody can, you know, and he seemed quite shocked with Jane as she was going down the dance. So he inquired who she was, and got introduced, and asked her for the two next. Then the 2/3 he danced with Miss King, and the 2/4 with Maria Lucas, and the 2/5 with Jane again, and the 2/6 with Lizzie, and the Boulanger. "If he had any compassion for me," cried her husband impatiently, "he would not dance half so much. For God's sake, say no more of his partners. Oh, that he had sprained his ankle in the first dance." "Oh, my dear," continued Mrs. Bennet, "I am quite delighted with him. He is so excessively handsome, and his sisters are charming women. I never in my life saw anything more elegant than their dresses. I dare say the lace upon Mrs. Hurst's gown..." Here she was interrupted again. "Excuse me." Mrs. Bennet protested against any description of finery. She was therefore obliged to seek another branch of the subject, and related, with much bitterness of spirit and some exaggeration, the shocking rudeness of Mr. Darcy. "But I can assure you," she added, "that Lizzie does not lose much by not suiting his fancy. He is a most disagreeable, horrid man, not at all worth pleasing. So high and so conceited that there was no enduring him. He walked here and he walked there, fancying himself so very great. Not handsome enough to dance with. I wish you had been there, my dear, to have given him one of your set-downs. I quite detest the man." Oh, that dramatic irony. Or situational irony. I always forget the difference. What do you think? One more chapter? No, your eyes are drooping there. Okay, one more chapter. Chapter 4. When Jane and Elizabeth were alone, the former, who had been cautious in her praise of Mr. Bingley before, expressed to her sister how very much she admired him. "He is just what a young man ought to be," said she. "Sensible, good-humoured, lively, and I never saw such happy manners. So much ease, and such perfect good breeding." "He is also handsome," replied Elizabeth, "which a young man ought likewise to be, if he possibly can. His character is therefore complete." I was very much flattered by his asking me to dance a second time. I did not expect such a compliment.
Did not you?
I did for you. That is one great difference between us. Compliments always take you by surprise, but me, never. What could be more natural than his asking you again? You cannot help seeing that you are about 5 times as pretty as every other woman in the room. No thanks to his gallantry for that. Well, he is certainly very agreeable, and I give you leave to like him. You've liked many a stupider person. Dear Lizzie. Oh, you are a great deal too apt, you know, to like people in general. You never see a fault in anybody. All the world are good and agreeable in your eyes. I've never heard you speak ill of a human being in my life. I would not wish to be hasty in censuring anyone, but I always speak what I think. I know you do, and it is that which makes the wonder. with your good sense, to be honestly blind to the follies and nonsense of others. Affectation and candor is common enough, one meets it everywhere. But to be candid without ostentation or design, take the good of everybody's character and make it still better, and say nothing of the bad, belongs to you alone. And so, you like the man's sisters, do you? Their manners are not equal to his. Certainly not at first, but they are very pleasing women when you converse with them. Miss Bingley is to live with her brother and keep his house, and I am much mistaken if we shall not find a very charming neighbor in her. Elizabeth listened in silence, but was not convinced. Their behavior at the assembly had not been calculated to please in general, and with more quickness of observation and less pliancy of temper than her sister, and with a judgment too unassailed by any attention to herself, she was very little disposed to approve of them. They were, in fact, very fine ladies, not efficient in good humor when they were pleased, nor in any power of being agreeable where they chose it, but proud and conceited. They were rather handsome, had been educated in one of the first private seminaries in town, had a fortune of £20,000, were in the habit of spending more than they ought, and of associating with people of rank, and were therefore in every respect entitled to think well of themselves and meanly of others. They were of a respectable family in the north of England, a circumstance more deeply impressed on their memories than that of their brother's fortune, and their own had been acquired by trade. Mr. Bingley inherited property to the amount of nearly £100,000 from his father, who intended to purchase an estate but did not live to do it. Mr. Bingley intended likewise, and sometimes made choice of his county. But as he was now provided with a good house and the liberty of a manor, it was doubtful to many of those who best knew the easiness of his temper whether he might not spend the remainder of his days at Netherfield, and leave the next generation to purchase. His sisters were very anxious for his having a estate of his own, but though he was now established only as a tenant, Miss Bingley was by no means unwilling to reside at his table, nor was Mrs. Hurst, who had married a man of more fashion than fortune, less disposed to consider it his house as her home when it suited her. Mr. Bingley had not been of age 2 years when he was tempted by an accidental recommendation to look at Netherfield House. He did look at it and into it for half an hour, was pleased with the situation in the principal rooms, satisfied with what the owner said in its praise, and took it immediately. Between him and Darcy, there was a very steady friendship in spite of a great opposition of character. Bingley was endeared to Darcy by his easiness, openness, ductility of temper, though no disposition could offer a greater contrast to his own. And though with his own he never appeared dissatisfied, on the strength of Darcy's regard, Bingley had the firmest reliance, and of his judgment the highest opinion. In understanding, Darcy was his superior. Bingley was by no means deficient, but Darcy was clever. He was at the same time haughty, reserved, and fastidious, and his manners, though well-bred, were not inviting. In that respect, his friend had greatly the advantage. Bingley was sure to be liked wherever he appeared, and Darcy was continually giving offense. I like that paragraph a lot. It really shows the foil that Bingley is for Darcy, the juxtaposition between the two of them and how they work. I wrote an essay about that one time. It was a good essay. I'm the best at essay writing. Yeah. The manner in which they spoke of the Meryton Assembly was sufficiently characteristic. Bingley had never met with pleasanter people or prettier girls in his life. Everybody had been most kind and attentive to him. There had been no formality, no stiffness. He had soon felt acquainted with all the room, and as to Miss Bennet, he could not conceive an angel more beautiful. Darcy, on the contrary, had seen a collection of people in whom there was little beauty and no fashion, for none of whom he had felt the smallest interest, and from none received either attention or pleasure. Miss Bennet he acknowledged to be pretty, but smiled too much. Mrs. Hurst and her sister allowed it to be so, but still they admired her and liked her, and pronounced her to be a sweet girl, and one whom they should not object to know more of. Miss Bennet was therefore established as a sweet girl, and the brother felt authorized by such commendation to think of her as he chose. night, sweetie. I love you.